Okay, my name is Frank, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. I thought I'd start with a couple of little housekeeping type things. I was reminded this morning that one of the little rituals that we do in OAPP is when you start working with your sponsor on the steps, they tell you to bring your big book with you and to write on the title page the following things. Above the title, Alcoholics Anonymous, on the title page, you write, I am willing to go to any lengths, and then you sign it and you date it. So I now remember that I started this on December 15th, 2016. That's when I started to work the steps with my big book. The title page. The title, where it has Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism, fourth edition. Yeah, so that's what you write at the top there. You write, I am willing to go to any lengths and sign it and date it. And then lower on in the page, you write this letter from God to you. It says, Dear Frank, you are never going to have your way again as long as you live. Love, God. And she said that, you know, some people say, oh my gosh, that's terrible. I thought it was fantastic. I sure hope that's true. I never want to have my way again. I want God's way to happen. P.S. If you follow the directions in this book, you will thank me for it one day at a time. So I just like that little ritual that we use to start the OAPP, working the steps. I'll read it again. So this means you guys all got to start working the OAPP program right now, today. So go get yourself a sponsor and do it. P.S. If you follow the directions in this book, you will thank me for it one day at a time. So in other words, the directions that are in this book, the clear-cut directions that are in this book, is all you need to work the steps according to the OAPP program. Okay? The other thing I'd like to share a little bit about was that I had a couple of text exchanges with one of my sponsees last night and this morning. And he had had, like, I think 5 days of abstinence on day five. And he was going to sit, he was going to have lunch, but he had a part of his lunch 30 minutes before lunch was scheduled to start. I don't know exactly what the circumstances were. And it was an abstinent food. It was going to be part of his lunch, but he just had it early. And that little thing there was enough for him to then go have some other food and have some other food. And then he binged the rest of the day and texts me at the end of the day, and I'm going to start again tomorrow. So what I texted back to him is that, you know, this is one of the reasons why I think counting days is not useful. Because if you're counting days, then once you've blown it, you've blown it for the entire day, and I'm going to start again tomorrow. And that's what I did for those 18 years. I was starting tomorrow for 18 years, and that's what got me to 460 pounds. And that it's more useful to take it one moment at a time, not 1 hour at a time, not one meal at a time, not one day at a time. It's one moment at a time. And what I have for 12 years now is imperfect abstinence. And by imperfect abstinence, I mean that there may have been some meals where I had more than I wanted to have, and I finished the meal and I said, boy, I wish I hadn't done that. That was more than I wanted to eat. That's not the way I would like to eat every day. And I just forgive myself and just stick to it. And you know, I don't use that as the excuse to eat for the rest of the day and start again tomorrow. So that's my point of view. And you know, I think that being 100% perfect on your red light foods may be very appropriate. But if you have issues like, you know, timing or quantities or things like that, which is what all of my abstinence was, is about quantities, for that I have to be willing to forgive myself and not, you know, start all over just because I had too much quantity in one meal. So anyway, I wanted to start with that. And now I'll get into the step work. Oops. Okay, so step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Well, you know, if you read through the 12 steps, read through the big book, every single prayer in there is praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry it out. They emphasize over and over again, you don't pray for somebody else, you don't pray for yourself, except if it will be helpful to other people. So that instruction has been embedded throughout every prayer that's mentioned in the big book, and there's tons of prayers all the way through the big book. Now, the prayer is pretty obvious. This is where I'm asking God, you know, I'm basically talking, either I'm talking out loud, to God, or I'm talking internally in my head to God and asking for something or asking for help or whatever it is. But what is meditation? And there are many kinds of meditation. I've told you I've taken the MBSR course, and I've taken some other courses and other things that I won't get into. But this is what I've found, ways of describing meditation. A lot of them involve controlling attention, controlling where I'm placing my attention. They can be, there's mindfulness, which is kind of just noticing where the attention is right now. Oh, I'm paying attention to an inner voice talking. Oh, I'm paying attention to a sound that I heard. Oh, I'm paying attention to how hard the chair is on my butt. You know, just noticing where attention is being directed is mindfulness meditation, and just noting it, you know, basically noting it and then letting it go. You don't concentrate on it. You don't keep replying to that inner voice. If you notice the inner voice, oh, I'm paying attention to inner voice, okay, what's next? And, you know, oh, it's cold in this room, or it's hot in this room. So it's paying attention to any sensory information, any feeling that you have. If a feeling comes up, I'm feeling bored, I'm feeling sick, I'm feeling tired, I'm, you know, pissed at my wife. Notice any kind of feeling that comes up, or a thought in the head, or any kind of physical sensation, anything at all that you notice that you're paying attention to, that would be doing mindfulness meditation. And Buddhist Vipassana meditation starts with concentrating on the breathing. So you kind of notice the feeling of the air going in and out of your nostril as you breathe in and out. You just breathe in and out normally. You don't breathe special in any way, but you just notice the feeling of the air going in and out of your nostril. And your mind is going to wander, and you'll be thinking about what the hell am I going to do when I finish this meditation. And whenever you notice that, you just bring it back to noticing the air going in and out of the nostril as you breathe in and out. So that's concentrating on the breath. You can pay attention to bodily sensations. For example, you can do a meditative walking. You can walk someplace and just notice the feelings of your feet touching the ground, the muscles contracting, the air blowing by, something like that. That's a walking meditation. You could be laying in bed and kind of scanning your body. You could pay attention to your toes. I don't know about you, but if I pay attention to my toes right now, I kind of feel a tingling in my toes. And then if I move it up to my calves, I feel a little tingling in my calf. And I can notice that I'm actually paying attention to that part there as I move my attention up and down through the body. So you can kind of just scan it up and down like that. There's also progressive relaxation, where you relax your calf muscles, then you relax your thigh muscles, then you relax your buttocks, relax your body, your arms, your legs, your head, all the muscles. You go up and down the body, scanning, relaxing muscles, and noticing the sensations of those. Then there's slow movements like yoga. You know, yoga is a form of meditation where you hold a pose for a count, and then you go to a different pose, and those are all forms of meditation. Some of the religious practices that are meditative are chanting. Chanting, when you get into a rhythm of just chanting a quick phrase over and over again, that's a meditative practice. Or rhythmic dancing, you know, you hear a lot of primitive cultures where they do a lot of chanting and dancing. Those are all forms of meditation that they're performing in those cultures. And another one is repeating a mantra. The transcendental meditation, when you pay your, I don't know how many hundred dollars, you get a mantra given to you that's special just for you. And you repeat that mantra to yourself over and over again in your head during your meditation. So that's another way of doing it. And these are all about staying in the now. Notice every one of those practices is trying to notice what is going on right here, right now. Where is my attention being directed right here, right now? And, you know, you can notice that my thought is thinking of the past, or my thought is thinking of the future, but those are thoughts that are thinking of the past and future. You're having those thoughts right here, right now. So as far as I'm concerned, meditation is all about being in the now, not being in the past, not being in the future. And you know, that this is Eckhart Tolle has the book The Power of Now. That was one of my that's an outside issue. We shouldn't talk about outside issues. Never mind. Cancel that. Okay. And in fact, an implicit goal of meditation, as far as I'm concerned, is the decreased thinking. Now, you can't sit there and think, I'm going to decrease thinking, because you're thinking about thinking, you know. So it's not possible to do it by actually thinking that I'm going to decrease thinking. That's not going to work, because you're just going to be thinking about decreasing thinking. That's all you're going to do. You're going to change the subject from whatever you were thinking about before to thinking about decreasing thinking. But if you do these meditative practices, you'll notice little blank spots. Hey, I didn't have a thought for a while there. You know, if you notice a thought come up and that's what you're noticing, oh, there's a thought that came up, Once you say, oh, there's a thought that came up, you can then notice a sensation in your body. And that means that you're not noticing a thought at that point. So whenever you're noticing something that's not a thought, that means that you are successful in not having a thought at that moment. Now, it may just be moments. You know, it's hard to tell how often we think because we're so used to it. We think all the time, you know. As you're driving down the road, you're thinking about what you're going to do when you get there, or think about what happened before you left, or whatever it is that you're doing. You know, there's lots of things that you can think about. So this is my view of meditation, and this is based on my experience, so I'm allowed to share that here, but I'm not allowed to share any books or anything like that. And, you know, there's a lot of religious meditations that, you know, lots of religions have meditations. Even, you know, you don't think of Christian as being a meditative religion very much, but a lot of Christian sects that are monastic sects that, you know, go live away in a monastery for a long period of time, they're meditating there. That's what they're doing, is they're meditating. They're praying and meditating. They're doing both, praying and meditating. So even Christian religion has parts of the religion that do a lot of meditation. I never heard about meditation in my Catholic upbringing, but there are monastic traditions in Catholics that do have meditation. And then there's secular programs like the MBSR that I mentioned. So that's my view of meditation. Now let's go and look at what the big book says. First of all, I searched for meditation outside of step 11, and there were four mentions altogether of meditation. Three of them are like this. In meditation, we ask God, this is on page 69. In meditation, we ask God, this is about the sex inventory, by the way. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. On page 83, also on step 9, it says, as we clean house with our family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. And page 164, in A Vision for You, it says, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. So those all sound kind of like prayers to me, because you're asking God for something. Then there's another mention of meditation, which is in the family afterwards. And it says, the family can be invited to join in morning meditation, and they can take part in a daily discussion without rancor and bias. So maybe that's actually doing meditation with your family, or it might be doing prayer with your family. I've heard more of prayer, family prayers, than family meditations, but maybe that's family prayer time. So now let's continue with step 11 itself. And they say step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. So beyond this point here, inside the body of step 11, there are two mentions of the word prayer, and there are two mentions of the word meditation. But there are six other places where it says we ask God for something. So I would claim that there are actually eight total mentions of prayer in this step 11 here, and two mentions of meditation. Now I'm going to go through this once, and then I'm going to go back and go through it again. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than us are using it constantly. It works if you have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. So there Bill is saying he's going to make some valuable suggestions about prayer. Then he says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, at what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Now, this is what a lot of people mistakenly call the 10th step written practice at night. This is obviously in the 11th step in the big book, so it is not 10th step. It's 11th step written practice at night. So that's the evening practice. And then there's the following practice. It says, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we employ our mental facilities with assurance. After all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher place when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. So that's sounding like a prayer to me there. And the next paragraph talks about thinking and prayer. It says, In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right prayers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the brain. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We may pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We have come to rely on it. So everything I've read so far all seems like prayer to me. It's asking God and thinking and things like that. And then the next paragraph says, we usually conclude this period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all throughout the day what our next step is to be. And it goes on from there. So he's claiming that this was meditation here. And it just doesn't sound like meditation to me. And then the next paragraph is the other mention of the word meditation, where it says, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. And it goes on from there. So, you know, I hope I don't get kicked out of the Big Book Thumpers Club for saying this, but I don't think Bill really understood meditation. I think that what Bill thought was that prayer and meditation were like synonyms. Prayer is where you, maybe prayer is where you're asking God for something, and meditation is where, or prayer is where you're talking to God maybe, and meditation is where you're asking God and maybe listening for him to answer you, and that's the meditative part of listening for the answer, listening for that intuitive thought, which is fine. You know, those are all wonderful practices, but I just don't think they're meditation. So I suggest that you look for a source of meditation outside of the Big Book. That's my anti-Big Book Thumpers Club thing. But let me go back and look at these the practices themselves again. So when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? That's exactly the list that we have for the 10th step. Those four items are exactly the same list. So it's all about selfishness and self-centeredness. We're asking, where were we selfish and self-centered throughout the day? Do we owe an apology? So if we find that we did that during the day, but we didn't make an amends for it right there on the spot, we're noticing it here at this point, and we can catch up on that, and we can make the amends as soon as can. You know, the idea is to make the amends as soon as you can. If you didn't do it at the time, it's a great idea to review it at night and see, oh, I didn't do it at that time. I can do it tomorrow morning, or, you know, maybe I can call them right now. So if you find somebody you know, that you owe an apology, that goes onto your amends list that you're going to take care of as soon as you can. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? And this is asking, did I do that fifth step part of it? Did I contact my sponsor and tell him about how I fell below what I wanted it to be at? I wasn't as unselfish as I wanted to be, and I was selfish and self-centered. And, you know, become humble again with my sponsor by telling him that. Were we kind and loving towards all? You know, we're supposed to, when we're doing our 10th step, we're then supposed to try to be helpful to somebody else. So this is asking, were we kind and loving to all? What could we have done better? What would have been a better thing to do? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Probably. Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? That's what the 10th step asks us to do, to think of what we can do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. So in other words, don't beat yourself up about it. You know, if you've discovered some 10th step that you needed to make during the day there that you didn't make, don't beat yourself up about it. And then after making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Do I need to contact my sponsor and tell him about what I did that I forgot to contact him about? Do I need to make an amends to the person that I wronged? And ask God what we should do about that. So, you know, and a lot of people talk about doing this in writing, and that's great too. Writing is a different way of talking. You know, it uses different circuits in the brain or something. Things can come out in writing that you wouldn't have said verbally. So I think a writing is a good thing. Now, I have to tell you, I've never gotten this practice going on a regular basis in my own life here. And this is that's a deficit. Don't follow my example. Be better than me. Do this practice at night. It's a good thing to do. It'll be very valuable. So that's the evening practice. And then on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. So this is kind of setting the practice for the entire day here. I'm going to ask God to direct my thinking through the day, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Again, these are all selfish and self-centered ways of thinking. So I'm asking God to please help me not think selfishly and self-centeredly. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental facilities with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. It goes along with the line where it says that, asking to be relieved of this. I can't remember the quote. Maybe one of you guys can remember it, where you say that that's the proper use of the will. Asking for God's will, something like that, is the proper use of the will. I can't remember. Nobody here can remember. I mentioned it yesterday. You guys don't remember what I told you? I don't remember what I told you either. So, but somewhere in the big book there, talks about that's the proper use of the will. And that's what this is here. This is the proper use of the will, asking God to help me be divorced from selfish and self-centered thinking. So, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or a decision. And that's, again, the conduit, is everywhere that I've seen it, the conduit that gets God's will communicated to me comes through that inspiration or intuitive thought. So wherever your higher power is, that's where it would be making the connection to you. And remember that I just turned that into my higher power. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. And, you know, it relax. Yes, sure.
Yeah, Coach, how can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line. All we wish, it is the proper use of the will.
That's it. That's exactly what.
Is that on Paul?
Yeah, 85, okay. Yeah, so that's the proper use of the will, and that's what it's talking about here, is asking God to help us be divorced from selfish and self-centered thoughts. So we relax and take it easy, and that's when the intuitive thought comes. You know, if I'm struggling and thinking, if I'm trying to think of the right answer, think, you know, should I do this, should I do that? You know, that's not waiting for the intuitive thought to come. That's trying to think the answer through. And that doesn't allow room for the intuitive thought. You know, the intuitive thought is kind of like a little whisper saying, oh, you know, maybe consider this. And if I'm thinking, there's no room for me to hear that little intuitive thought, that little whisper. So that's again why meditation is a useful thing. It helps to quiet down that thinking and make it easier to hear that intuitive thought. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. So you're getting a stronger and stronger connection to your higher power by doing this practice throughout the day. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. I think what they're talking about there is that I think it was God's inspiration, but it was actually me telling me to do this, you know. So you got to be careful about whether or not it's really coming from your higher power, an intuitive thought or an inspiration, or whether it's just me thinking it's an intuitive thought or an inspiration. You know, it's really me wanting to get my way. So nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. So this is the very valuable part of this step here, as far as I'm concerned. It's very valuable prayers in the evening and looking at our day and taking an inventory of our day, and it's valuable in the morning to ask that our prayers be directed towards helping other people instead of being towards selfish and self-centered motives, and to ask for God's help as we go through the day and to pay attention to that intuitive voice, the intuitive voice in our head. So. And then this is where he says, and we conclude this period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing this, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. You know, I can remember in Catholic grade school, you know, they were taught us about prayer. And so our family was pretty poor. You know, we had 10 kids all together by the time my mom was finished. And And my dad worked a factory job. In fact, he had to have two jobs to try to make up for that, and my mom wasn't working outside the home. And so money was always very tight, and I would pray that we get that we win the lottery, you know, that we win a big prize of some kind. And it never happened. And I got so disillusioned, you know, God wasn't working. That's praying for selfish and self-centered motives. That was my prayer that wasn't working back then. You know, so that was part of what soured me on God, because he didn't answer my prayers, you know. So, and then they suggest you can ask your friends and family to join you in your meditation or your prayer. And if your religious denomination requires a definite morning devotion, Bill recommends you do that. So if your religion that you're in says do this in the morning or do this in the evening, follow their practices. Attend to that also. Sometimes the members of religious bodies will memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we've been discussing. So there are many helpful books. So he's also suggesting you go out and look for other books. So go out and look for a meditation book. That might be a good thing to do too. Suggestions might also be obtained from one priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. So ignore what they don't say right, and pay attention to what they do say right. And then the last paragraph of step 11 suggests that we pray throughout the day. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. We ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. So when we're agitated or doubtful, I mean, that could be, if it gets strong enough, it could be a condition to do a 10th step about. If we get too agitated or, you know, whatever, or too afraid, if that's what the doubt is, a fear, then that might be a point for a test step. But if we're not at that point of requiring a 10th step, we ask for the right thought or action, and we constantly remind ourselves that we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." Now, that is a wonderful idea. I wish to hell I did that. If I did that many times a day, I think I would be much better off than I am right now. I just don't think of it. I mean, I guess I need to ask for God's help to remember to do that. But "Thy will be done" is a, you know, I love short prayers. There's a short prayer, "Thy will be done." You know, you can't get much shorter than that. So I need to try to remember to do that prayer many times a day. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. So we're much less likely to be selfish and self-centered if we keep saying, "Thy will be done." We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. Remember the actor that wanted to control the play and make everybody do what he wanted to do in the play? That's how you get burned out. Whereas if you keep asking, "Thy will be done," that's asking the director to direct you in the play, not to make everybody else do it. And then it concludes with, "It works, it really does." So that's the end of step 11. And I also took a look at the AA 12 and 12 for step 11. And that's where they have the prayer of St. Francis. And then the meditation that he suggests is to slowly say that prayer and to really pay attention to the words of the prayer. So, you know, that's kind of getting closer to meditation, but it still kind of is like a prayer. It's kind of like slow prayer. Maybe that's what Bill thinks meditation is, slow prayer. Something like that. I don't know. Yes?
A question. So there's a lot of information there as far as things to do. How much time do you spend with each of these things? Because, I mean, it sounds overwhelming.
Yes. Well, as I told you, I am preaching, but I don't practice this. I preach this, but I don't practice it. I wish I did more of this. What I do is I do meditation. I told you that I've got 2,113 days now of meditating at least once a day. And the average is probably at least a half hour. The average over that whole time is at least a half hour, which means that sometimes it was an hour of meditation and sometimes it was 5 minutes. So, you know, I somewhere in that range of 5 minutes to an hour of meditation is what I do each day. And I think the average over that 7-year period is still about a half hour. So that's my major step 11 practice, is the meditation part of it there. The short prayers throughout the day, you know, those I don't do anywhere near as often as what this is suggesting. And I don't do the evening written practice. I don't do that, the written 10th step practice that they suggest. And I don't particularly go through this exact thing in the morning when I pray. A lot of times I meditate in the morning because I find that if I meditate at night, I often fall asleep. If I meditate in the morning, I'm less likely to fall asleep. So I kind of have a morning practice, which is typically meditation. But if I get to the end of the day and I haven't meditated, I will meditate at the end of the day too, instead of in the morning. So I don't do this. You know, I'm not saying I'm anything like a saint. I think somebody that could do this entire thing very religiously every single day would be a saint. I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't, but they'd be on the way to becoming a saint. So yeah, it's do the best you can. You know, I don't do any of the steps perfectly. You know, even step one, like I said, I have occasional meals where I eat more than I wanted to. That's not doing step one perfectly. If I was at step one perfect, I would have exactly what my food plan would be, and I would, you know, do everything perfect. But I don't. So just do your best.
Sounds like maybe just take one piece of meditation, just do that on a disciplined basis, and just do something.
Yeah. Listen, I also, you know, I said that, you know, I should be doing step 10 at least two or three times a day. I probably average less than once a day. That's probably the truth of what I average, is less than once a day. I won't tell you how much less than once a day, because that would be embarrassing. But it's average less than once a day is what I do at 10-step. And I know that I have at least two or three opportunities every day to do it. There's at least two or three times when I get pissed off by somebody driving, or by what my wife says to me. Or, you know, the great thing is, sometimes now when my wife says something to me, I notice it and I just don't respond. You know, I don't give my usual rejoinder or point out that she was saying something very rude to me or anything like that. I just let her say it. And so that's kind of like a little. You know, I do know a lot of people that do the morning readers, you know, for today, there's several of them that we have. I know a lot of people do those. So that's kind of a form of prayer and meditation that they do every single day. I don't even do that, but that's one thing you get into. It's just one page to read, and there's usually some kind of a meditative thought that you could meditate on if you wanted to do a five-minute meditation. Yeah, and you're right. Contemplation, where you say the prayer slowly, that is kind of a form of meditation. And that's what a lot of the monastic orders do. And you know, by the way, that 11-step prayer is the prayer of St. Francis, my namesake. So I'm 100% in favor of the prayer of St. Francis there.